Judge Rovner, Judge Bauer, Judge Hamilton, may it please the Court. I'm here today to argue the case of Francis Allen Schmitz, the appellant, who asks that this Court vacate his sentence and remand it back to the District Court for further hearings and sentencing. In arriving at the sentence it did, the District Court relied heavily and primarily mentioned it three times on an erroneous fact. That fact being that the fraud scheme lasted for 14 years. As outlined in the briefs, the government charged, and in arguing at sentencing, essentially a five-year term in their version that they submitted to the court for sentencing. Again, they issued approximately a five-year term. The pre-sentence report, in all fairness, made reference back to a 2003 event, and for the sake of this argument, we're willing even to accept that as the outer limit of this, which would make it a six-year, 10-month, although I think relevant conduct analysis is more important under the guidelines. It makes no difference when you arrive at a criminal history category two.
When Judge Pohlmeier referred to the length of the fraud scheme, didn't she most likely mean his overall history of fraud rather than the charged offense? I mean, surely she knew the parameters of the charged fraud.
Well, Your Honor, going through the pre-sentence report, and the government relies on it, and it's a response brief, the fact that goes back that far is a statement made by his wife. And this is a woman who was in the process of divorcing him, whose life had radically been altered as a result of him being arrested, being incarcerated, that she was surprised at his deception, which goes back to that time period. But in going through the financial details, she simply refers to his ability to defraud financial institutions for many years. This court in Bradley articulated a standard that there should be sufficient indicia of reliability that a person is based on facts that are not erroneous. And I would simply argue that the statement, which is essentially not in the employment category or in the financial category, but a social history category, from an estranged wife, that she had been deceived by him for 15 years, does not meet the standard for the indicia of reliability. There simply is no factual basis to go back that far.
Is it reasonable to read Judge Pohlmeier's comments as in essence saying, look, this guy's life spun out of control since 1996. He was deceiving his family. But it's a little hard for me to read this, frankly, as saying the transcript at page 34, the key reference that you're relying on, it's a little hard for me to construe that as saying she thought the charged scheme went back to 1996 when she had just resolved a contested issue about whether something in 2003 was relevant conduct or not.
Well, Your Honor, the specific statement is that since 1996, when Mr. Schmitz left his position at the bank, he has really not been employed in any legitimate, lawful way. He got a severance payment from the bank, as I understand it. He received some Social Security money via his brother. But essentially, his life since 1996 has been getting over this fraud scheme in ways that are a mystery to people that I think were concealed to the people who love him and know him well. So Mr. Schmitz's offense conduct, that is, the offense, the conduct for the offense of conviction, is very serious. It is longstanding. This is what the government had to say about the same offense conduct. There's no reason from the government standpoint, when you look at the 3553 factors, to go any lower than the low end of the applicable guideline range. So, for instance, judge, one of the factors to reflect the seriousness of the offense that the defendant committed, it was an offense that was committed over a five-year period of time. There's a big difference, I think, in someone who's deceiving their wife. And we don't know the full. So there's a one-sided version of that. It certainly wasn't something that was contemplated in formulating the guidelines. One can be an absolute bore to your wife. One can be an absolute offensive in many ways. I don't think that's fair to sentence him, and I don't think the indicia of reliability in that statement that she made to a pre-sentence report writer asking about a social history background to find that the offense of conviction lasted for 14 years. The outermost point that the, if you take relevant conduct in consideration, that the pre-sentence report writer comes up with is 6 years, 10 months, which this 14-year period she refers to is more than double that. And I just think that given this court's decision in Bradley, given this court's decision in Edwards, especially where the judge has trying to figure out how much is sufficient but not unduly burdensome, said that she believes the fact of incarceration more than the length of incarceration is sufficient. And then secondly, gives him a minor reduction from the guidelines for his teaching of inmates over at the BOP.
So do you think we should remand to Judge Paul Meyer to tell us what she was thinking?
I do, Your Honor. That's exactly what I said. You vacate the sentence and remand it so this issue can be fully briefed and clarified and the judge can make her viewpoints known. I think there is sufficient indication in the record that she was somewhat disposed to go to a lower sentence, and she said three times that it was this 14-year duration that was why she was coming to that sentence.
And where else did she refer to the 14-year duration?
In the transcript at page 34, there's...
We talked about that passage.
We just, right. Then the transcript page
She referred several times to the long duration. But
you're right, Your Honor. You're right. Specifically, she does
but
not
the,
mention
the only 14-year comment is this, I think, frankly, ambiguous comment at 34.
I agree. I don't think she says 14-year, but she does talk about the long duration, and I think based on that, it's clear that she thought it was 14 years long, and, and we may respectfully disagree on that. The other procedural error, and I note my light's coming on here, so I want to be brief, but the judge committed, we think she did not adequately consider and give explanations for denying relief for the combination of health and age. There's a plethora of data showing that people at his age, especially with the long period of relatively crime-free existence, are less likely to recidivate. And I think maybe the government misconstrues my argument about the health issues. My point simply is I was relying on the most recent federal actuarial charts for the life expectancy of a 60-year-old man. That's obviously going to be affected by someone with a combination of diseases that he had, all of which are some of the leading causes of premature death. And again, the factor creep argument, the Sentencing Commission itself recognizes this, and it's failed in its institutional role and has never provided the empirical research, much like the crack cocaine cases, which are receive someone's litigation.
But this isn't a situation akin to crack versus powder, is it? Where, you know, there's a widely recognized disparity in the guidelines.
Well, I think there are similarities, Your Honor. I think it is analogous. The only reason that the Sentencing Commission itself recognized it, they published it in a report similar to the beginning of the crack disparity, and the only reasons they've ever given for this are comments received from the Department of Justice and the Judiciary Commission. And then they ignore all the data that they publish in their own reports to Congress about the request for upward departures during the relevant time period. I'd like to reserve a little time for rebuttal because I just... Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we'll reserve. Okay, so, Mr. Kohler, hi. Come on up.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Ed Kohler on behalf of the United States.
So should we order a limited remand?
No, Judge, for several reasons. First, as the first issue addressed by counsel, the Court clearly read in the context of the entire sentencing hearing, the Court's comment about fraud scheme clearly was not an error. The judge was, I believe, if you read it in the context of the entire hearing, talking about the defendant's fraudulent, overall fraudulent conduct. And I think, Judge, you were right on point when you mentioned the fact that the judge had just gotten done resolving the issue of whether it was a Category 1 or Category 2 criminal history and had to find that the scheme started in July of 2003. So it's really hard to believe that the court would then moments later decide that 1996 was the start of the scheme.
Right, but she did use the phrase, this fraud scheme. So
clearly, Judge, and I think it was probably a bad choice of a word if the judge had said fraudulent conduct. It was certainly supported in the record. As pointed out, the pre-sentence investigation report has an extended piece from the wife talking about in great detail what she had discovered after the husband's arrest, the types of communications she was getting from various financial institutions, and talking about the defendant's deception through the last 15 years. We also have judges in another part of the pre-sentence investigation report covering that 1996 to 2001 period, information directly from the defendant about how he was treating his income, if you will, during that period of time. Essentially, what he was saying was that he was borrowing money from his businesses and didn't have to report it for income tax purposes, even though he was, I think the amount was making $15,000 net a month. On top of all of that, the pre-sentence investigation report also disclosed that the defendant had a prior state theft conviction from 2002. So there's a very solid...
What kind of conviction?
It was a theft conviction, Your Honor, having to do with the use of someone else's credit card. So in terms of was there reliance on an erroneous fact, clearly from the government's standpoint, no. In terms of the other argument made by counsel as to whether the mitigating factors raised by the defendant were adequately addressed, the government's position is clearly they were. First of all, the age and health factor. Judge Pallmeyer went to some great length to explain that she was aware of the fact that he's 60 years old, that he was taking certain medications. He was receiving medications for conditions that aren't unusual in a 60-year-old male in our population. And, in fact, she said that the Bureau of Prisons could adequately take care of him and even went to the point by the end of the sentencing making a remark that the defendant actually looked much better before her as he stood there that day than he had before. And, in fact, the defendant...
30 pounds.
30 pounds from exercise and dieting, Judge.
And that wonderful prison diet, right? But does wonders. Mr. Kohler, let me ask you on the challenge to the guideline issue.
Yes, Judge.
The district judge doesn't seem to have said very much at all about that issue. And I'm troubled by that just in terms of our cases and the more generic duty a district judge has to respond to address arguments being made by the defense.
Well, Judge, I believe that the court statement, and it was fairly straightforward, the court said, I agree basically with the defense that it's the fact of incarceration rather than the length of incarceration that's important. Her next words out of her mouth at the sentencing hearing is, that said, and then she starts talking about the guidelines and what the guidelines require. And went to some...
Well, the guidelines don't require anything, mm-hmm. right?
I'm sorry, Judge. The mm-hmm. types of... that's poor wording on my part.
Well,
I apologize.
I mean, that's a problem,
no.
right?
But mm-hmm. no, what the judge did was, I believe, if mm-hmm. if you look at the record, went and focused on what the 3553A factors were. So the court found that it was a longstanding offense, that it was very comprehensive, that it was a sophisticated offense, that it did harm not only the financial victims but the family as well. And taking all of those issues into consideration, the judge determined that a substantial sentence was required and then considered, gave the guidelines what I believe she had to do, the respectful consideration that they deserved, decided that that substantial sentence would be the low end of the guideline range, as it was, Judge, with some credit for what the defendant had done in the prison over the last 3 months. And I believe that the court did everything that was required of her to adequately and fully explain her choice of sentence in this particular case, and that there was no procedural error. She didn't rely on any erroneous fact. And that sentence of the slightly below the guidelines sentencing range should be affirmed. Unless there are any further questions from the court, I thank you very, very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to address 2 points the government just commented on. First off, the government makes the claim that it must have been in the judge's mind that the period of the fraud after resolving the issue for the criminal history category 2 going back to 2003. It's obviously not that clear because the government, after that same decision was reached, argued to the court, again, that it was a 5-year period for the scheme of fraud, as they did in the submission that they submitted beforehand. So I don't think it was that clear based on that iteration. Secondly, in answer to your question, Judge Hamilton, I do think that the Supreme Court in Kimbrough, and then they reiterated in Spears, does impose this duty on the court to make some explanation. And I don't think that very offhand comment that the government responds to, that the court felt that incarceration more than the amount of incarceration any way, shape, or form addresses a total failure to discuss why a threefold increase in the guidelines was necessary when there was no empirical research on the basis of the sentencing or on the part of the Sentencing Commission to substantiate the basis for that dramatic increase. I think the judge, and frankly for that matter the government totally ignored the argument as well. And again, I just want to reiterate that it isn't so much that that the health alone is the reason for a to justify reduction in sentence. It's that a man his age with these 4 very deadly conditions, and it was also argued in the transcript that they had just discovered a thyroid problem as well at the last minute, that it shortens his life expectancy, that the life expectancies in those tables were for not for a person with that combination of diseases, and there is no reason why the remaining productive years of his life, which was an estimate of my part, I'll frankly acknowledge it, should be in prison. For those reasons, we ask that you vacate the sentence and remand for clarification. Thank you.
Thank you so very much to one and all. The case will be taken under advisement.